Aaron Brown was recently named by Lake Time Magazine best writer and blog in the state. And we know him from the Great Northern Radio Show, Dig Deep, and for his deep, deep love of cheese. Am I right, Aaron?
Yes, this is peak season right here.
Aaron joins us now from his home in Balsam. I also love the cheese, so it's no, you know, it's love.
Me three.
It's food you can make in a cave.
What's going on?
You can.
Okay, yeah, that's true. It's good.
That's how I determine what I eat is food that you can make in a cave.
Yeah. So, Aaron, what are conditions like in Balsam?
We're looking at about 5 inches of kind of wet, crusty snow that's still falling, and you know, we'll see if we get the full foot that was implied in the weather forecast, but it's still coming. And I know Christina stayed home from work today, so that was what it was like out on our roads.
Okay. And are the boys excited for the snow?
I think so. Our oldest, Henry, he got snowshoes for Christmas, so he is
nice.
He is polishing those snowshoes this morning, ready to go.
All right. Well, Aaron, we wanted to have you on this morning to kind of take a look back at the year in the news that affected northern Minnesota. Let's start off. I saw your blog post yesterday. Let's start with mining. So I don't know much, which is probably true, about mining. Explain to me the significance of ArcelorMittal, is that how you say it?
Yeah, ArcelorMittal.
Yeah.
They're the largest steel maker in the world, and that's a title that used to be held by U.S. Steel back in the day, but times have changed over the last several decades, and this Luxembourg-based international company, backed by a lot of money from really all over the world, has become the titan in the industry, and they're certainly taking a stronger position here on the Iron Range as well. They announced yesterday that they'll be managing the mine that they own a majority of, that is Hibbing Taconite. And previously, Cleveland Cliffs had managed that mine for a number of years, and they're a part owner in the mine, but had always managed it. Cleveland Cliffs specializes in the mining of raw materials, specifically iron ore in our region. And this was kind of a change. It was kind of a corporate, you know, internal politics kind of change. But I think it reflects, you know, the fact that there are a lot of changes happening in mining, and more consolidation, and also for Hibbing Taconite kind of highlights a major problem they've got, which is they've got to find more ore. They are looking at 4 to 7 years of mine life with the ore reserves they've got now, and the ore they would otherwise expand to mine is either under roads and towns like Hibbing and Chisholm, or it's to the west on land they don't own. And so they've got to figure out a strategy here, and this is probably the first of several moves that will, you know, rectify their problem. But it kind of shows that, you know, these mines here on the Iron Range are going through all these moves that are influenced by international demand and supply and corporate moves. And so it's a very distant locus of control. And we're watching that play out a little bit. And in general, for the year, mining has had a great year for production. It's been the price of iron ore spiked at several points this year, and it, you know, a lot of the mines made a lot of money this year, and that was ultimately a good thing for workers, because they were able to settle their unresolved labor contract in a fairly favorable contract after several months of tough negotiating. So, you know, they cashed out, so to speak, this year and did pretty well. But we're seeing signs that this is, you know, going to be dicey here, as it always is going forward, seeing, you know, what happens if the economy changes and what happens when these mines, you know, run into problems like running out of ore.
Okay, well, let's move into other big stories of the year, and I think, you know, this is all over the country, of course. Elections of 2018, what'd you see in northern Minnesota that stood out to you?
Yeah, I think in northern Minnesota we had what was billed as one of the biggest swing districts in the Congress, which is the 8th Congressional District. And, of course, Republican Pete Stauber won that race. And it was competitive, but it wasn't extremely close. He defeated Democrat Joe Rudinovich. And I think that's more notable for the fact that nationally Democrats carried the House of Representatives and had a very strong election. If you add up all the congressional votes, Democrats had a very strong popular total of their votes, and they took 40 seats and swept to a new House of Representatives. But here in northern Minnesota, a lot of those same trends did not materialize. And, you know, looking at it, and we've talked about this on Dig Deep and in other segments, you know, we're watching as demographically parts of the country are behaving and reacting to news and politics differently, just based on, you know, what kind of cultural or demographic factors are at play. And, you know, northern Minnesota is not behaving like it did years ago. It's not an anomaly like it was, where it was a strong Democratic district in a rural industrial area. It's now behaving more like a rural industrial area anywhere else in the country. So it'll be... these races are going to be competitive going forward, but Republicans are going to have more advantages than they've ever had before if these trends continue. So that was the lesson, I guess, from the election. But the election itself produced a new legislature. DFL took the House of Representatives in Minnesota, and of course we'll have a new governor, and so a lot of things could change in the next 2 years. But we're also coming up on a census, and that census will, you know, influence redistricting, which could, again, change things in the future.
All right. Well, just recently, more news about PolyMet. Explain to us what's been going on there. Is that one of the big stories you were following this year?
I think it was a turning point in that story. Of course, that story has been in our conversation here for 15 years. It's almost tiresome in terms of local issues, but... It had a bit of a break this year, and just in the fall, when the state of Minnesota issued several of the necessary permits for PolyMet to mine copper, nickel, and other metals near Hoyt Lakes. In fact, they're going to use the former LTV steel plant. They wanted to retrofit that for what they do. And so the permits were one of the big parts of the story, whether or not they'd get them. And a lot of the debate you've heard over the last several years has been over whether the state should issue those permits. Well, they did. They issued most of them. There's still a couple of outstanding permits, but they're expected to come along, which means that this story now changes, and it becomes more a question of, will PolyMet have the investment and the backing to actually do what they say they're going to do? All of the environmental promises and all of the economic promises that were made, it's now up to them to show that they are actually going to follow through on those things. And so it's not that the story becomes less controversial, nor is it a guarantee that we're going to have a mine that opens. But it is a change in that the weight of the of what needs to happen now moves to the company and its investor, which is, people forget sometimes, that PolyMet is not really a mining company. They're a development company. The real power behind them is Glencore, which is an international mining company that has been involved in a number of mines, some of them quite controversial for both environmental and labor practices reasons. So we're going to be dealing with Glencore, which is a different beast than the developers who have made the promises thus far. So, it'll be an interesting change, and perhaps at least more productive, in that we'll be talking about, I think, more of a real-world kind of thing from now on.
So, Aaron Brown, we're talking about some of the big stories of 2018 that he's been following that impact northern Minnesota. Big news that we talked about on Dig Deep during the year was the closing of the Herberger stores. What did you see in terms of retail and industry in general?
Yeah, we talked about this kind of earlier in the year, and it's still true. you know, we're watching a few things happen. One is the change in small towns and the fact that a lot of the old businesses that were supported aren't doing as well as they used to because of an aging population and also different shopping habits. You know, more people are going online and shopping. In fact, even the box stores that killed so many of the downtown businesses, so to speak, are now struggling with the reality that more people are shopping online. And anyway, Herberger's was one of the casualties of this. There's Herberger's in Brainerd and one in Virginia, Minnesota, and other places, I think, in our area.
Bemidji.
And these were, you know, clothing stores, kind of like the old department store for clothing. And you know, for a lot of small towns, there aren't that many places like that where you can go and buy your Sunday best and maybe something fashionable and maybe some, you know, some shoes or whatever else that you need all in one place. And so it's a change in retail habits and kind of putting a lot of our small towns at the crossroads for how they want to plan and strategize for their town. You know, where, how can you get people to shop in your town, and what do you do to compete with the internet, which is such an omnipresent part of our lives now, particularly people you know, who are middle-aged or younger are just overwhelmingly using the internet. And so it's kind of a crisis of sorts for local retail, but it's having these effects in our towns that we can see.
So I was wondering, with the holiday season, how shoppers felt the loss. I'm sure it was a big, because there were a couple of closings in Grand Rapids too, and I felt it. I was sad I didn't have that as an option anymore for some gifts.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, you, especially when you're looking for something and you realize that there's no, you have to shop online, or even the big box stores aren't necessarily selling what you're looking for, especially for some of that higher end clothing. You know, I say higher end as though Herber, I guess that's the Iron Ranger talking. Herberger's, that's fancy, but
get some Yellow Dot specials there, 70% off.
That's right. We missed the pennies in Hibbing. You know, Hibbing lost their JCPenney. And so in Hibbing, it's kind of hard to find that clothing. You know, Grand Rapids has some local stores that sell, you know, specialty clothing, you know, but, and so that's good. But, you know, for families and, folks, it's hard to find places like that without going online. And as you might know, Kari, ordering clothing for children online comes with challenges when you can't try it on. You don't know what's going to come out of that box, and it's not quite as convenient, actually.
So I was wondering this also, and maybe you have some insight as to where to find the statistics on it, on how small businesses in our area did over the holiday season, you know, versus years past.
Yeah, I'd like to know. I don't, but I do think that there's got to be some opportunity here for small businesses. And I think there is some, like, rumbling, there's some change in that some of these small town, downtown kind of stores have an opportunity to be a niche market now for people who want to shop that way and to serve a community in a very specific way. Because people can order the cheapest thing online so easily, folks who want to have the experience of trying things on or having something maybe tailored or made for them or just having the ability to see and touch the clothing and or the product of whatever it is. And I think, I don't know if we can call it a renaissance just yet, but I think there could be a bounce back effect, and that smart small businesses can maybe take advantage of that. You know, look at what's happening with population trends. You know, people are moving back into the big cities. They like the urban environment, and perhaps in small towns too, we can look at kind of revitalizing what a small town is. And I think there's some hunger for that in this big sterile world of internet commerce.
I agree.
Now, my personal take on Brainerd, my hometown, and so I'm not there all the time, but this year I really felt like I saw changes in the downtown there. Yeah. And they, you know, they lost a JCPenney, they lost a Herberger's as well, and there's restaurants, there's new shops, there's consignment clothing shops in downtown Brainerd, and people, there's, you know, when I've been there at night or during the day, it's a little tough to find parking. Not that they need new parking lots. I hope Chuck Marone's not listening to us, Aaron. Yeah. That's not what I'm saying. It just used to be they were wide open for years and years. And that's just a little anecdotal. I'm not sure what that.
Well, I think anecdotally, you can look at there being a lot of activity in some of our downtowns, you know, even in Hibbing and Chisholm and on the Range and Grand Rapids. There were things happening, and I think it's there wasn't a lot of bad news for the downtowns. I think there could be a bit of a rebound, and it's certainly something we're studying for the factual side of this, you know. Right. But you know, it was interesting. You know, Katie Carter did that story on Hibbing when we were there for her series, and she remarked as an outsider how much activity she saw downtown Hibbing. And it's been a long time since people have said anything like that upon sight of downtown Hibbing. So I think that's encouraging.
All right. Any stories? Any other stories we might have missed that were big this year?
Well, there's a few. You know, the groovy slippers were found.
Big story.
Judy Garland's ruby slippers worn in The Wizard of Oz, which were stolen in a yet unresolved caper. Wow. From the Judy Garland Museum in Grand Rapids years ago, and were discovered by the FBI, and there was a press conference, and the slippers were displayed and photographed. I still remember, I recall the day very well where they had set up these slippers for display at this press conference, and it was clearly something that someone at the FBI put a lot of attention into the display of these slippers. The presentation was magnificent.
And, like a red velvet thing. And
somebody had the best day of their career at the FBI that day.
But we don't know how or why or anything. And then we saw them at that press conference, but they're now we don't know where they are, right? They're under lock and key.
Yeah, it's one of those things where this case was solved, but not in any sort of satisfying way. It's almost like, you know, some kind of amnesty was struck, or somebody who had done it wanted out of the life on the lam or whatever, and had cut some kind of deal to turn the slippers back over. But it's almost like, you know, the people who had insured the slippers and whatever, that kind of moved on from them. So now it's this strange thing where, you know, the past has come back in the form of ruby slippers. So,
well, Aaron, how are your holiday celebrations? And
oh, they're lovely. They're not over. You know, you got these big extended families like I do, and we've got another one coming on Saturday. But Christmas was lovely, and Christmas Eve we go sledding every year at the big hill at the Eveleth Golf Course. I've done that since I was little, and now I go with my kids. And this year the weather and the snow was perfect, so it was just a wonderful day. And family, everybody getting along. Everybody's doing cool stuff, and it's real nice.
We talked a lot about it during Dig Deep about the change in politics and the conversations at the tables. Any politics talked about?
You know, a little, but not too much. You know, it's hard to talk about especially with people who disagree. And I think that's probably when you look at Twitter, I peeked at Twitter. I try not to look too much, but I peeked at Twitter during the holidays there, with Christmas Eve and Christmas, and most of it was people venting about their family's politics, whatever they were, and trying to escape it, you know. But the reality is, I think this time of year, at least for me, it shows that there's stuff that's way more important than politics, especially, you know, politics is important, but And what people do in politics matters to our lives. But I think it all kind of reflects on how we treat each other and love our families and take care of each other. And if we do those things, you know, the politics will sort itself out. And that's what I took away from the holiday anyway.
It's a nice positive way to think about that, Aaron.
Yeah, you know, you got to do something to get through the day.
Well, I'm hoping for a cheese tray for you on Saturday with the
there better be. Yeah. No, but then we got to detox, you know. Then we got to
not till January, Aaron.
I got to imagine the little like a 200 foot Roto-Rooter to clean out all my arteries. Start to clear this thing out, because we've not been good to our vessel these last few weeks.
Not today's problem. Thanks,
yeah,
Aaron.
Yeah, okay. All right. Good, good.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. It's all Aaron right. Brown. You can read more at minnesotabrown.com. We'll be talking with Aaron and Chuck in the new year for our Dig Deep segments. If you've missed them recently, you can check them out, catch up at our website. All of them are available there at kexe.org or sign up through a podcast.